Good morning. Today's Daf and Shabbos Kuf Mem Gimel. We are on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're starting today at the two dots with the words Mao Shalakar Min Ar. We are here in the 21st parak of Masechet Shabbos. We are discussing various aspects of Muksa, and we are in situations in which one wants to move the Muksa to the side. So as we already discussed back in the 17th parak, 17th parak of Masechet Shabbos is the one that is totally dedicated to the topic of Muksa. This very short parak that we're in right now also discussing the topics of Muksa. But back in the 17th parak, so we discussed the Heterim of Tzorach Mekom and Tzorach Gufo. And that means to say that as long as something has a designation of a kli, and I need it right now either because I need the item itself for something which is permitted on Shabbos, I need the hammer right now to crack open a nut, that's Tzorach Gufo, or I need the space where it's on right now, so I'm moving it to the side, that's Tzorach Mekomo. So we already established back in the 17th parak that if one would like to move the muksa because of purpose of Tzorach Mekomo or Tzorach Gufo, one is allowed to do so. That's what we learned back in the 17th parak. Here, in our parak, we're discussing the moving of stones and other items that are not kalim. And so therefore, with these items, so they are going to be moved, but it needs to be more of a heter. There needs to be more allowances in order to move them on Shabbos. So they're sort of say more muksa, if we could use such a term. Meaning as opposed to a kli, which is obviously already a utensil, but then you have to look at the designation of a kli, if it's a kli shel malach leheter versus a kli shel malach leiser. But here when we're talking about stones, so stones are muksa machmas gufo, they themselves are muksa, and so therefore they represent a stronger category of muksa. And so therefore, to move them, you need to do so in a more indirect fashion. We already learned back in the Mishnah, in yesterday's daf, on the top of the Amud, that if I have, let's say, a stone on top of a barrel, so what am I going to do? So, obviously, it would be easiest to just simply pick up the stone and move the stone. But the Mishnah says no. What you have to do is you have to tilt the barrel and have the stone move off to the side. So, and again, because it's a stone, because it's muksa machmas gufo, so therefore, there needs to be more of an indirect movement of the stone. And the Mishnah went on to say that, let's say that there's a barrel or glasses right next to the barrel, and if I tilt it over to the side, I'd be breaking other barrels, or perhaps I'd be breaking the glasses. So you're going to pick the barrel up, move it over, and then tilt it on its side. So we have this issue of moving muksa items on Shabbos, with the Mishnah giving an allowance to do so, but only min atzad, only to do so in an indirect manner. And yesterday in the Gemara, we also discussed the issues of buses, meaning to say that if a person put deliberately the stone on the barrel, he wanted that stone on the barrel, he wanted it resting on top of the barrel before Shabbos, and it wasn't inadvertent, it was totally bemazed, it was totally deliberate. So then we have the issues of buses, which we discussed briefly yesterday, and that means to say that once something is now the base for an item, which is muksa, so this is a concept of a buses, ledavar ha'aser, and so the item itself now is going to be an item of muksa. So that means to say that if I put the stone deliberately on the barrel before Shabbos, with the intention of it staying there over Shabbos, so then the barrel itself is also going to be muksa, and this is the concept of buses, and again, we discussed that yesterday as well. We are going to be now in the Gemara on Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis, we're at the two dots, and we're going to be discussing the heterim of Tinoko Kikar. Now, perhaps you remember, we did this earlier in the Masechta, and that is the idea that if I have a muksa item, and I want to move the muksa item, so there is an allowance to take either a loaf of bread or a baby, put it on top of the muksa item, and that affords me the opportunity to move the muksa item. Now, if you remember, earlier in the Masechta, when we discussed this, we limited this heter only to a mace. If Rachmanis, or somebody who died on Shabbos, and the body, of course, is muksa, the remains are muksa until after Shabbos is over, so the moving of that body is, generally speaking, going to be prohibited. But because there's an understanding that at times the body is going to need to be moved, so therefore there's a dispensation, a heter that's given, and that is basically that if I put a loaf of bread or a baby on top of the body, so now I can move the body. This is the heter of Kikar Otinuk. Now, this heter, does it have any other application? Can it be used in any other circumstance? That's what our Gemara is going to be discussing right now. And so let's begin with the Gemara. I'm Rabbi Yoshi, Ashacha, Charniki, Bechasio. Let's say a person forgot a wallet in the courtyard. So Meniach Aleha Kikar or Tinoko Metaltala. So he says you can put either a baby or, I'll go in order, a loaf of bread or a baby. And you can move now the wallet. So obviously Rav Oshia is giving now an extension of this heter of kikar tinok, not just to the mace, but also even to a wallet. Amar Rav Yitzchak Shacha Levena Bechatzar Meniach Alei Kikar Tinok Metalkalam. Rav Yitzchak says the same thing is going to be true regarding a brick. You could use the heter of kikar or tinok. By the way, this heter of kikar tinok, it's like almost like the inverse idea of buses. Meaning, we just got them discussing that if I put an item on top of another item before Shabbos, so its muksa status now is going to go down into the item. Here, almost like the inversion. Like I have a muksa item, and I'm going to now put a non-muksa item on the muksa item, and the non-muksa status extends downward. Okay, so if you could just imagine, this is just like a mirror opposite of buses. But anyway, so obviously these Amoraim are giving significant extensions of this heter of kikar tino. Continuing in the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shila, Am Rav Asi, Pam Achas, Shichachu Daskaya, Malaya Maus Bisracha. At one point in time, they forgot a wallet that was filled with money, and they left it in the Rishus HaRabim. Uval Vishalas Rav Yochanan, and they asked Rav Yochanan what to do. Varmalemi Nicholai Kikar Tino Vital Taluha. And again, he gave this heter of putting on either a loaf of bread or a baby in order to be able to move it. Now, being, by the way, that this is the Rishus HaRabim, you're not going to be able to go that far with it unless you go Pachos, Pachos, Midal Amos. You go less than 4 Amos. In fact, Rashi says exactly. The Lishtar Latalta, Rashi, second wide line. The Lishtar Latalta, Agabayo, Toch Dal Amos, Vetitulaha, Pachos, Pachos, Midal Amos. So the only way that you could traverse in the Rishus HaRabim is going incrementally less than 4 Amos, stopping before you get to each of the 4 Amos. The Rashi also gives another solution in terms of how it could travel in a Rishus HaRabim. Rashi says, Mechitza Shel Bnei Adam, Kid Amrinan Be'erevin. When we get to the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Mem Gimel, so we're going to see a really, really interesting halacha in terms of creating a Rishus on Shabbos using a human wall. Stay tuned. So anyway, point being, there are ways of transporting an item in a Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos. Rashi gives 2 solutions. Anyway, for our purposes right now, the topic is whether or not the heter of kikar or chatzar can remove a muksa status temporarily. And right now we have Amoraim who are saying yes. Amar Marzutra Hilchasa Kolchan Ishmaita Debeshocheach. Marzutra says that the application of this halacha, where I could use kikar tinok, is only going to be in a case where shocheach, where the person forgot. However, if a person deliberately forgot, it left something out there. That sounds. Let me rephrase that sentence. Deliberately left something. If a person intentionally put something out there, so then not afforded the chance of using the heter of kikar tinok. Rav Ashi amar filo shachach namilo, and Rav Ashi says no. In other words, that now you see these amoraim significantly limiting the extension of the heter of kikar tinok. According to the Shita of Marzutra, only in the case of shochech. According to Rav Ashi, under no circumstance. Well, under almost no circumstance. Can one use the heter of kikar tinok? Velo amru kikar otinok elab lemeis bavad. According to Rav Ashi, which is the accepted halacha, the only allowance of using this methodology of kikar tinok is only going to be in the case of a mace. Because of the understanding that the mace is a really serious situation, in which not only is it going to be sometimes necessary for the mace itself, and let's say the mace is in a position where it's hot, it's out in the sun, and decomposition will be accelerated. Also, there, of course, is the emotional aspects as well. So for a mace, so the Chachamim gave this allowance, gave this dispensation of putting a bread, a loaf of bread or a baby on top in order to move it. But under no other circumstances, even when there's a financial consideration like the wallet, like we just described, there's not going to be an ability to make usage of this heter of kikar otinok. Gemara continues, Abaye manach kapa a kipi. Abaye actually put a spoon on a bundle of grains. So there was a bundle of grains out there, and he wanted to move it. And so Abaye afforded himself the opportunity to use the heter of putting a spoon on top of it. So and basically, it's the heter of kikar utinok. And by the way, Abaye clearly understood that it's not just limited to either a loaf of bread or a baby, but okay. Anyway, so he put a spoon on in order to move the pile of grain. Rava manach sakina abar yona. And Rava took a knife, put it on top of a raw bird, raw piece of meat, and umetaltala, and he moved it on Shabbos. So, obviously the Amoraim here are going back and forth in terms of how much one could use the heter of kikar tinok. So again, Rav Ashi scaled it all the way back, but But Abai and Rava, by the way, who lived a couple generations beforehand, so they used it for even non mace muksa. Am Rav Yosef kama charifa shmaita dardiki. Rav Yosef now is critical of Abaye and Rava's usage of this heter of kikar utinok, and Rav Yosef says dardiki. Dardiki is a term which on one hand is flattering, but sometimes is used as a criticism. Dardiki means young talmidei chachamim. Rav Yosef basically is saying that it is halachically creative what they're doing, but perhaps a little bit too far. And Rav Yosef says to both Abai and Rava, look, in the case of Shocheach, maybe. But not in the case of Lechatchila, meaning to make usage of this mechanism of putting a non-muksa item on a muksa item in order to move it, certainly not in the case of Mezin. So Amar Abaye, so Abai now is going to come and excuse the action in which he did. So Ilab Adam Chashav Ana, so Kapa Kipa Lamali. So Abai says, look, it happens to be that because I am an Adam Chashav, and just being aware of your position is not arrogance. Flaunting that position, that would be arrogance. Abai is just simply recognizing the position that he was in. He's an Adam Chashav. And so the truth of the matter is, he says, is that as far as a baseline for this halacha is concerned, there is no problem for me to move the wheat on Shabbos. And I wouldn't have to employ this heter of putting a non-muksa item on the muksa item. Because as far as I'm concerned, it wasn't a non-muksa item to begin with. Because ha-chazel emizgai layu, because one could sit on it. Okay, not really. I don't have a good picture in my head in terms of how the pile of grain looks. Maybe it's like a haystack. Whatever the case is. In other words, it's something that could have been sat on. And so therefore, he felt that fundamentally wasn't even a muksa item. The fact that he put a non-muksa item on it, so that was just simply a chumrah that he imposed upon himself. But he says, but me'ikr hadin, it wasn't even a non-muksa item to begin with. And Amar Rav Ana ilav da adam chashav ana sakina bar yonah lamali. And Rav makes the same point regarding his action of putting a knife on top of the raw meat, on top of the raw bird. He says, the truth of the matter is that the raw bird to begin with is not muksa. Because raw meat could be eaten in its raw state. You can chew on the raw meat. We already discussed this numerous times back in the day. So there, obviously, they prefer to cook their meat. But one of the habits that they had is that they eat meat in its raw state. So he felt that the raw bird is not a case of muksa. And so fundamentally, it's not muksa. And so as a result of that, the idea that he put a knife on top of it, that was just a chumra, a self-imposed chumra that he put upon himself. But he says, but the truth of the matter is that it wasn't even muksa to begin with. So Abai and Rava, basically both of them saying that they fundamentally agree that the heter of using non-muksa items on muksa items in order to move it is a limited in its scope. And as far as their usage of it, that was only a chumra that they imposed upon themselves. The Gemara now is going to just, from here until the Mishnah, is just going to wonder Rava's position. And the Gemara goes on to explore time the chazil umsa lo chazil umsa lo. So the Gemara says now, the reason why Rava says that the raw bird meat is going to be not muksa is because it is something which is edible. The Gemara says, now wait one second. For a moment, let's just entertain the idea that it's not edible. So you mean to tell me now that Rava would have stated that the raw bird meat is going to be muksa? So the Gemara says, Lamema de Rava ka Rabbi Yehuda svirle. And you're telling me that in the realm of muksa, Rava subscribes to the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. Again, we saw this extensively back in the 17th Perek, but now we get to say it again. And that is the scope of muksa. How wide is the gzera of muksa? So a fundamental debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is slay muksa. Rabbi Shimon lay slay muksa. Now, even though the way the Gemara phrases it is very black and white, but as we learned already, Rabbi Yehuda has a much wider scope of muksa and incorporates many categories within muksa, and Rabbi Shimon has an extraordinarily limited scope of muksa and only certain items, right? Grogris, dried figs, which a person put on the rooftop in order to dry going into Shabbos, where he's mekatze biyadayim, where actively he puts them out of his mind for Shabbos, that's muksa. But short of that, according to Rabbi Shimon, most things are not going to be muksa on Shabbos. So we have this fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara now wants to know, where does Rava lie within this machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? And you want to tell me now, says the Gemara, that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the Shita, that Rava subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara says, but that I find that hard to understand, or hard to accept. Because the Hamar Rav L'Shameh, And by the way, let me just make this point very clear. The Gemara thinks that right now because the only way Rava felt that the bird, the raw bird meat, was okay on Shabbos, not Muktzeh, is because it was edible. Raila achla umsa. A person could eat it in its raw state, which implies now that if that weren't the case, so then it would be Muktzeh, and that means that Rava is subscribing to Rav Yehuda. But the Gemara says, but I don't think you're right. Vahama Rava l'shamei, but Rava said the following to his shamish. Tavali bar ivza v'shadim mei l'shunra. He says, look, I want you to roast for me. This is, by the way, on Yontif. His instructions were, I want you to roast for me this goose, and then as far as the intestines are concerned, what you're going to do is you're going to take the intestines and you're going to throw them to the cat. Now, what is this reflective of? If you take a look at the bottom Rashi over here, Rashi writes as follows, the last Rashi on the Amud, right? Shadi Me'el Shunra, Alma, Metautalu Mishum Shunra. The moving of the intestines can be done because of the cat. Ve'af agav, Da'ina lochazi la'adam. Now, Delav Orech Ara Lamechla B'yamtov. So Rashi over here writes the following, that look, on Yontif itself, so people don't eat the intestine meat on Yontif. Now, Rashi over here, if you want to see more about this idea, you go to the Gemara in Beitza and Dafla Megimel. So over there, where this Gemara comes up, over there as well. So you could see Rashi, you could see Tosus also amplifying Rashi's idea. And that is, by the way, Tosus over there ends up not agreeing with Rashi, but in just in terms of understanding Rashi, so the intestines, which was eaten, it's edible, edible pieces of meat. Back in Europe, it's kishka, people ate it. But as far as Anyantiv is concerned, so Rashi is of the position that people, generally speaking, after freshly shechting a bird on Yontif, so they're going to be eating the meat of the bird, the muscle of the bird, but they're not going to be eating the intestine of the bird. It is qualitatively not the best meat. And so therefore, generally speaking, it was now something which was, for that day, for Yontif, it was something which was generally rejected because there was other much better meat to eat. Even though yesterday, it's something that could have been eaten, but today, however, it's not going to be eaten. So therefore, one could have deemed that as Muktzeh. But Rava says to his attendant that what he's going to allow is to the shechting of the goose, the roasting of the goose, and as far as the intestines are concerned, give it to the cat. Even though it's Muktzeh. So what we see over there from that incident, or at least what we think what we see from that incident, is that Rava really subscribes not to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, but rather to the Shita Rabbi Shimon. That's the Gemara's argument right now, that we are confused in terms of where Rava stands on Muktzeh. On the question of the raw bird meat, so he says, since it's edible, so therefore it's not Muktzeh. Sounds like he's holding like Rav Yehuda. Meanwhile, based on the instructions that he gives to his intendant, which is to take the intestines, which were yesterday a non-Muktzeh item, today on Yontif they are a Muktzeh item, and he says, and take them and give them to the cat, so that sounds like he is subscribing to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Okay, so we are a little bit confused regarding Rava's positioning on Muktzeh, whether he holds like Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon, as we now turn to the top of Kuf, Mem, Gimel, Mem, Aleph, Ha'asam, Kevin, De Misrach, Taiti, Lavei, Me'esmo. So the Gemara says, no. The assumption that we made that was incorrect was his attitude towards the intestines. We know that generally speaking, the intestines are not going to be kept over until Motzei Yontif. Meaning again, on Yontif itself, people elect not to eat the intestines because it is something which is qualitatively inferior. However, says the Gemara, knowing that the intestines will spoil, so his mindset is on the intestines as well, meaning they're not Muktzeh because he knows exactly that he plans on shechting the bird the next day, on Yontif, and he knows that the intestines, if left over for Motzei Yontif, are going to spoil. So therefore, his mind is on the intestines, and that's why they're not Muktzeh. Hachinami Mestaber, the Gemara says now, all this makes sense, meaning that the way now we said of Rava that he's holding like Rabbi Yehuda, not like Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara says, really makes the most sense. Hachinami Mestaber, the Rava, Ku Rabbi Yehuda Sfirle, Didarish Rava. Rava expounded the following in public, and that is, Ishalo Tikanas Lebeit Sa'itzim, Litol Mehem Ud. A woman cannot go into the storage house where the wood is kept over there in order to take some sort of stick, in order to move the stick, because Stam Eitzim Lahasaka, generally speaking, the wood is there, collected over there for fuel, for fire, and so therefore all that wood is going to be Muktzeh, and so therefore on Shabbos, obviously you can't go in there. Even if the stick that you want is going to be used for some other purpose, but still, it is Muktzeh. V'ud shenishbar asur la'asikah b'yamtov, v'vishem asikim b'kelim, v'im asikim b'shivrei kelim. And on top of that, Rava also publicly announced that as far as anything that breaks on Yontif, So you cannot use it as fuel. If you have a bench and it broke on Yontif, you can't use it on fuel. Why not? Meaning on Yontif, you're allowed to make a fire. Yes, it's true. But only with wood that was set aside for the fire. Going into Shabbos, if I have a kli, which is not broken, so then it was set aside for usage, not for fuel. And then if it breaks on Yontif, to take the wood, the residual wood, and use it for a fire, so that would be a violation of Muktzah. Now, Rav is only saying this because he subscribes to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda, Shema Mina. So the Gemara says, so it is most, it is the most easiest way to say it is that Rav really subscribes to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, not to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And the only thing that really then needed explaining is why Rav told his attendant to take the intestines of the bird and to go give it to the cat. Seemingly that would be a violation of Muktzah, but the Gemara says, but it's not. That was the only part that needed explaining. But all other evidence would indicate the Rav, in fact, passes like Rav Yehuda within the general machlokus of whether or not you subscribe to the larger category of Muktzah or the smaller category of Muktzah. And he holds like Rav Yehuda, who subscribes to the larger category of Muktzah. That kind of takes us now to the end of our first sugya. So we just got finished discussing the usage of the heter of Kikar Tinok. The Amorayim were divided on whether or not the heter of Kikar Tinok can be used in broad application, or it can only be used for only the case of moving of human remains on Shabbos. And then, just a side question in terms of Rava's own position regarding Muktzah in general. We are now in the Mishnah on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. Here we are finishing up the 21st parak of Masechet Shabbos with the final Mishnah. Three issues to be discussed in this Mishnah. Issue number one. Beishamay omrim ma'avir me'al shulchan atzamos ve'klipin, ubeisila omrim misalak es atabla kula umina'ara. A question of what to do now with the bones after the meal is over. Bones and the shells of the nuts, when the meal comes to an end now, so you're left with bones on the table. Bones on the table, bones on your plate. And now moving of the bones. The bones are muktzah, are they not? And so therefore, how can one go ahead and move the bones and take them off the table? Now, I'm sure many are thinking right now, isn't this constitute a case of graf shori'i? Meaning, basically, we're looking at something which is unpleasant and something which is foul, and one is allowed to move something just based on the fact that it's graf shori'i. Perhaps our Mishnah over here is taking the position, perhaps, that the bones and the shells are not graf shori'i. Graf shori'i, something like excrement, which is really giving off a revolting odor. Over here, if we're just talking about bones and shells, certainly not pleasant to look at, but at the same time, however, it's not something that's really foul-smelling. So perhaps that's why it doesn't fall into the category of graf shori'i, but nevertheless, certainly it's muktzah. It doesn't have a purpose on Shabbos. It's not the edible portion of the food. It's a non-edible portion of the food. And how do you move it off the table? So the way the Mishnah presents it, Beis Shammai comes out to be mekel, which in of itself is an anomaly. We can count, we need two hands, but we can count the number of times that Beis Shammai turns out to be the mekel on a particular issue. And the way the Mishnah presents it, Beis Shammai now is mekel. And he says that what you could do is you could just simply move it off the table. And Beis Hillel says no, and in order to move it, you have to move it only indirectly. Picking up the table, right? The Mishnah's terminology is mesalek es hatavla. It sounds like from the Mishnah that there was some sort of board on the table where you could just simply pick up the board and move it over to the side, tilt it over, meaning tilt up an atzad, indirect moving of the bones and the shells, but you can't pick up the bones and shells directly. And what is the machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? The way Rashi presents it over here, and it'll be pretty clear from the Gemara as well, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are basically taking the sides of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Now, obviously, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel come historically well before Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda are late Tanayim. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are earlier Tanayim, right? Probably upwards of 100 years separating the two. But nevertheless, the point is that each one now is staying within each other's camps, meaning Beis Shammai is reflecting the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon with an extraordinarily limited scope of Muktzah, and therefore you can handle the bones and shells directly, whereas opposed to Beis Hillel, who's in the camp of Rabbi Yehuda, who has a much wider application of Muktzah. That's the way Rashi presents the Machlokas over here. And again, as we get to the Gemara, it'll be pretty clear that that is how the Gemara is going to present it as well. Next issue of the Mishnah, Ma'avirin Lufnei HaShulchan Perun Pachos Mechazayis, V'ser Shel Afunim V'ser Adashim Emneshu Maichel Behema. One is allowed to move from the table crumbs that are less than a kezias, and also the pods of peas and the pods of lentils, because Maichel Behema, because it can be consumed by animals. And so the Mishnah now telling us that the crumbs on the table and any of the quote-unquote not-so-edible items on the table but consumable by animals. So you just simply take them off the table, and because all this could just simply be used as food for animals, and obviously animal food is not muksa. And finally, the third topic of the Mishnah, Yisbog, Sifog, Im Yeshlo, or Beis Achiza Mekan Chimbo, the Imlav Ein Mekan Chimbo. So if I have a sponge, if it's got a handle, Rashi describes it as a leather handle, so I can go ahead and use it to wipe the table, but if not, I can't wipe the table with it. If Rashi writes that if I'm going to be touching the sponge in of itself with my hand, so then nischat bein etzviosav. So then what you're going to end up doing is you're going to be squeezing it, and by squeezing it, one's going to be in violation of extracting the liquid from therein. That is the malach of schita. When we get to the amud beis of today's daf, that will be the topic of discussion on the amud beis, squeezing. And so when I have the handle, so I'll be squeezing it less. Now, it is a challenging Mishnah to understand, admittedly, because even though it has a handle and I'm going to be using the sponge via handle, so I'll be squeezing less. But still, there's going to be an element of squeezing. Presumably, you're going to be putting pressure in order to squeeze it, and there's juice is going to come out of it, and liquid's going to come out of it. And isn't that still going to be a violation of schita? So perhaps, and again, this Mishnah certainly is challenging, but perhaps it means that with a handle, it doesn't mean that you are definitely going to squeeze it out, and perhaps that's not your intention as a davshin and miskaven, and we're going to assume, I know there's a lot of assumptions over here, we're assuming that it's not inevitable, it's not a psik resha, and maybe that is what is behind the Mishnah in terms of why it would be allowed with a handle. And the words v'chachamim omrim probably need to be removed from the Mishnah because this is not a point of dissension. This next point over here is just regarding muksa status. So nita b'shabbos. So our Mishnah says that it is a non muksa item, meaning you're allowed to move it on Shabbos, and ein makabel tumah. It's not going to be subject to kabbalas tumah. Rashi says because it just simply doesn't fit under any type of defined kli. Rashi says it's not kli eitz, it's not a kli beged, it's not a sock, it's not mateches. It's just simply the sponge is undefined in terms of what kind of kli it would be. And so, being that it has no definition, it's not wood, it's not metal, it's not cloth. So therefore, it's just simply not going to be mekabel tumah. We're at the Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman Anu ein lanu ela beishamik Rabbi Yehuda beisolok Rabbi Shimon. So Rav Nachman says the girsa of our Mishnah is to be inverted, meaning on the first point of moving the bones off the table. So we have a tradition that beishamik subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yehuda and beisolok subscribes to the viewpoint of Rabbi Shimon, meaning everything we said in the Mishnah, but just flip it. And Beishamai comes out to be the Machmer, and Beisolok comes out to be the Meiko, which parenthetically, by the way, is normally how they present themselves throughout Halacha. And Rav Nachman says that our Mishnah is not an exception. And so therefore, when going over the Mishnah, so the positions need to be inverted, where Beishamai comes out to be the Machmer, and the only way that you can move the bones and the shells off the table is only by picking up the table itself and tilting it over to the side, tiltum and atzad, but you can't move it directly, because Beit Shammai subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, whereas the Shita of Rabbi Shimon whereas the Shita of Beit Hillel is firmly encamped, entrenched within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, you are allowed to take the bones and move them directly. Ma'avir melefnei ha-shulchan peirun, misayil Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara over here says that this is a support for Rabbi Yochanan. Dam Rabbi Yochanan peirun, she'in b'em kezayis, asal abdem b'yan. That if I have crumbs that are less than a kezayis, so I'm not allowed to destroy them, meaning that there's an isra about tashkis for crumbs, even if they are less than a kezayis. And so that means to say that our Mishnah supports it. Now, in terms of the girsa of our Gemara, I just read the Gemara as presented in our girsa. So, and Rashi points out over here, how is our Mishnah proof? Because our Mishnah says, ma'avir b'yadayim v'lo zarek leg, that people don't throw it out and people save it for the dogs. And so that means to say that our Mishnah would seem to indicate that you should not discard crumbs that are less than a kezayis, but just the opposite. Save it in order to feed it to your dogs. That is the way Rashi presents our Gemara, and that's the girsa of our Gemara. If you look at the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Nun Beis, where it's the same statement of Rabbi Yochanan, and you look at the girsa over there, it says Perm Shein Bayim Kezayis Mutter La'avdam Biyad, or that seems to be the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Tosos favors the girsa of Brachos as opposed to our girsa over here, And so you can see Rashi, you can see Tosos in terms of trying to iron out which girsa is the better girsa fitting into both Gemaras over here. So a basic discrepancy in girsos in terms of whether Rav Yochanan's statement is that when I have bread that is less than a kazayis, is it asur la'avdam yad, that's our girsa over here, or the girsa in the Gemara Brachos, mutar la'avdam yad, see Tosos over here, who discusses the discrepancy of the girsos, and obviously it needs a lot more clarification. We're going to continue in the Gemara Seirah Shel Lafanim. We're talking now about the pods of peas. Mani Rabbi Shimon Hi Delesle Muksa. So the Gemara says the fact that you're allowed to move them seems to subscribe to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, who has a limited scope of Muksa. So Ema Seifa Sfogim Yesh Lo Beis Achiza Mekan Chumbo V'im Lav Ein Mekan Chumbo. So, but then the Mishnah turns to the position of the sponge, which says that when you have the sponge and it doesn't have a handle, so you're not allowed to use it on Shabbos Asal and Rabbi Yehuda. That takes us to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Not by Muksa, but the position of Rabbi Yehuda by Davar Sheina Miskaven. Meaning that your intention is not to squeeze out. Your intention is just simply to wipe the table. And meanwhile, when you wipe the table with no handle, with a sponge with no handle, you're going to be squeezing it. It's not your intention. The Mishnah says you can't do it. This falls under the category of Davar Sheina Miskaven. And our Mishnah seems to be subscribing to the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. Damar Davar Sheina Miskaven is Usur. So the Gemara says, and probably you already anticipated the Gemara's response, no, this is not a Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So the Gemara says this is a case of Psik Resha. If there is no handle to the sponge, so then the idea that water is going to come out of the sponge when I'm handling it directly with my fingers, that's inevitable. That's an inevitable consequence. This is a Psik Resha. And we know that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda agree in the case of Psik Resha. So this idea of the sponge is not just a Rabbi Yehuda idea, it's also Rabbi Shimon as well. So from this case of the sponge, there is no indication whether our Mishnah is siding with Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah could still be siding with the Shita Rabbi Shimon. And now going back to the moving of the breadcrumbs and the pods of the peas, so you can move them, and our Mishnah could in fact be subscribing to Rabbi Shimon, and is not contradicted by the case of the sponge. Hani gar'inim de tamrei, armaisa sharlata talinu, ho v'chazion agav iman. The Gemara now is going to be talking about the moving of pits, and the Gemara is going to make differences in terms of different types of pits. So here we're talking about the Armenian dates. So I know very little about the Armenian dates. I'm just going to work with Rashi. So Rashi says that the Armenian dates, and specifically, by the way, the pits of the Armenian dates, the Garinim. So, and Rashi points out over here, Garinim shal tamarim v'heim lebehema. They are basically designed for animals. And the next Rashi, Armaisa tamarim ma'im heim. So basically, the date over here, it's an inferior date. The date, anyway, goes to the animal. So the pits also are for the animals. And so as a result of that, it doesn't present a muksa issue whatsoever. Because the date goes to the animal, the pit also goes to the animal. So however, when it comes to the Persian dates, what Rashi points out, which is a better quality date. And the date itself, the flesh itself, is not given to the animal. We eat the date. So then it would be prohibited. Because now, basically, we have the fruit, generally speaking, designed for humans. Now that you have the dates now are refuse of that. And so, therefore, it's going to be an issue of muksa. Shmuel Matatlu Aga Rifta. Now what Shmuel would do is that he would move it in conjunction with bread. Meaning that when he finished the date, so he put the pit on top of a piece of bread. And now, obviously, there's an allowance to move the bread. And the date can just simply be moved with the piece of bread. Now Shmuel Tameh Damer Shmuel Osa Adam Katsarcha Bepas. Now this is Shmuel also being consistent with his position regarding making usage of bread. A person can be a little bit more liberal in terms of how he uses bread. Now the statement is actually sounds a lot more than just a little bit more. Osa adam kol sarcho bepas. In other words, you can do it for anything. But over here, the idea is that when making usage of bread, so even if you're going to be a little bit creative, it's not a bizayon ha'ochlin to go ahead and to make usage of it, meaning that it's going to go ahead and transport a pit. That would be fine. By the way, this also was back in Brachos, so we saw the statement of Shmuel. Rabba Metaltalu Agav Likna Demaya. Rabba would take the pits and he would move it together with a flask of water. Rav Huna braid Rav Yeshua Avilu Graf Shal Re'i. And Rav Huna, what he would do is he would take the pits, he would collect them all together, and so that they would become this big pile of pits, getting to the point of Graf Shal Re'i. Right? We briefly touched on this point in the Mishnah, but now what Rav Huna is doing here is that he is taking all the pits that were eaten over the course of the meal. He would put it in one large pile. Under those circumstances, now it is something which is uncomfortable. It's disturbing to have that big pile of pits. Now it hits the threshold of being falling under this category of a graf shel re'i. We've seen already a number of times in the discussion of muksa that once you have something which is foul smelling, the chachamim gave perfect allowance to go ahead and take it, pick it up, and discard it and take it out of the house. Now, fundamentally, we discuss this as it relates to excrement. Let's say that there is excrement in the house, so on Shabbos you're allowed to pick it up and take it out of the house. So over here, what Rav Huna is doing is he's actually piling up the pits so that it gets to the point of being a graf shel re'i. So this is a little bit of an extension of this, and the Gemara says actually he went too far. The Gemara says no, you can't do this. Meaning to come into a situation of graf shel re'i where accidentally somebody left excrement on the floor, somebody had an accident, whatever the case is. So the Gemara says, so that is something where the Chachamim gave total allowance. But to create a situation of graf shel re'i, which is what Rav Huna was doing as he was piling up the pits, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to do. That is, that's too far extending the idea of graf shel re'i. Rav Sheshes Arik Luhu Belishnei. Rav Sheshes would spit the pits out with his tongue. Rav Papa Zarklu Achare Amita. Rav Papa would throw them behind the bed. Amar Lava Rabbi Zechariah ben of Kulas Shaya Mechazer Panav Achare Hamita Vizarkan. He would turn his face to the other side of the bed or the couch. He would throw them back there. After Shabbos, he would pick them up. So various ways that the Amorim would handle their pits after they would eat their food. Hajan Alachno to Adam Es Beno. And so ends the 21st parak of Masechta Shabbos. And we begin. As we turn now to the top of Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, we are now starting the 22nd perek of the Masechta, Chavish and Nishbara. And we start off with a discussion of what happens when a barrel breaks on Shabbos. We already discussed extensively earlier in the Masechta what happens when a fire breaks out in the house. And so what the Chachamim were worried about is that if there's an allowance to put out the fire, if there's an allowance to salvage items from the house, so one is going to be tempted to put out the fire. We discussed this extensively back in the 16th parak. In fact, the 16th parak was dedicated to this very topic. Now, here in this parak, in the 22nd parak, so we're going to be discussing something similar. It's not exactly the same. And that is the breaking of the barrel. The breaking of the barrel, so the Chachamim were worried that the more we're going to try to recoup the wine that is dripping out of the barrel or the oil that's dripping out of the barrel, so the more that we're going to try to recoup, so the more we're going to lose ourselves, so to say, and then we're going to be tempted. We're going to be tempted to carry other utensils over here, perhaps carrying it through Rishus HaRabim. We're going to be tempted maybe to fix the barrel. So what the Chachamim did, like we saw back in the 16th parak, so here in the 22nd parak, where the Chachamim placed a cap in terms of how much can be salvaged from the broken barrel. And so the Mishnah begins, Chavish and Ishbara Matzil Amen Amazon Gimel Seudos. So with the barrel breaking, so what you could do is you could save, but you could only save enough for 3 meals worth. Remember back in the 16th parak, we talked about a machlokas in terms of whether or not you find yourself already after the first meal or after the second meal. Do you have to take that into consideration? Interesting over here that the Mishnah, when it comes to the saving of the wine from the broken barrel, is not going to make any distinction in terms of where we are in Shabbos. Okay. The Omer la'acherim bo v'tzil la'achem uvavash lo yispo. Now, you could tell other people, go ahead and save for yourself as well. Rashi writes over here, second Rashi in the Mishnah, Kol echad mazun gimel seudos. Everyone also has a cap as well. Meaning that when it comes to you saving wine and inviting other people to save wine as well, everyone is capped and limited to only 3 meals worth. By the way, the first Rashi over here in our Mishnah says that if you have an extraordinarily large barrel, so then you are not limited to having to save only 3 meals worth. It just happens to be that if you, let's say, you're only saving it in cups, or smaller utensils, so then you have to cap yourself at 3 meals worth. Okay, anyway, and you can't use a sponge. Rashi says, "Shelo yasim spog b'makom hayayin lachzor ulahatifo b'kli gzeres shemayischol." To go ahead and to use a sponge in order to absorb the wine that's coming out, and then basically taking that sponge, even if you're taking it carefully and moving it over to another clean in order to squeeze it out, so you may end up to actively come and squeeze it out, and so therefore you cannot collect it with a sponge. Now, as long as we touched on the issue of a sponge, so now the Mishnah is going to transition into the discussion of squeezing, schita. And this is going to be the Mishnah and the sugya in the Gemara that discusses squeezing on Shabbos. Squeezing on Shabbos is going to be a violation of Shabbos, as we're about to begin right now. It is a tolada. It's a subcategory of the malacha of dash. Dash, when one is threshing the wheat. So in order to extract the wheat kernel from the chaff, so what you do is you put a lot of pressure on top of it in order to get the kernel to come out. So over here, the tolada, the subcategory of that malacha, is going to be schita, in which one puts pressure on a fruit in order to extract the juice that's contained therein. So this is now going to be the tolada, the subcategory of the malacha of dash. It is an av malacha. And now what the Mishnah is going to be discussing is the following. Obviously, the act of schita in of itself is going to be asar on Shabbos. But what about if the juice is coming out on its own? And so we begin now the discussion in the Mishnah. So one is now allowed to squeeze fruit in order to extract juice on it on Shabbos. However, if they come out on their own, they're going to be prohibited. The Tanakhama of our Mishnah is of the position that the juices that come out on their own, so even though you didn't do an act, and so in principle, it would be okay to enjoy that juice because you didn't do the act, but nevertheless, the Chachamim say it's going to be Asr, because if you go ahead and you enjoy that juice, so then the concern is going to be that you are not going to you're not going to hold back from squeezing it actively the next time. Rav Yehuda Omer, Im La'ochlin Hayotemehem Mutter, V'im La'mashkin Hayotemehem Asr. Rav Yehuda makes the following distinction, and that is, it depends on what kind of fruit we're talking about. If it's a fruit that generally speaking is eaten, so then we're not worried that if there happens to be juice that comes out of this fruit, you're going to end up squeezing it the next time because typically this type of fruit is generally eaten. However, if the fruit that we're talking about is generally squeezed, so then you're not allowed to enjoy the juice that comes out even on its own because since this kind of fruit generally is squeezed, so then the temptation is that you're going to want to squeeze it the next time. Gemara has a similar discussion regarding the honeycombs in that if you started scraping and scratching the honeycombs and crushing them on Erev Shabbos and the honey still continues to flow out of it on Shabbos itself, a machlok between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer, whether or not one can enjoy the resulting honey that comes out from it from the squeezing, from the scraping that you did before Shabbos. The Chachamim are Machmir, Rabbi Eliezer's Mako, and we're going to come back and we're going to discuss that at a future time in the Gemara. In the meantime, however, let's start the Gemara's discussion. A couple of points before we get to the Schita discussion. Tana lo yispok b'yayin v'lo yitpach b'shemen, shelo yaseh kederach shu oseh b'chol. A person, says the Braisa, is not allowed to go ahead and collect wine with a sponge, and not even collect oil using your hands. Rashi, yitbach, machnis bo kapo. You're putting your hand in Hashem and nidbach bo. And the oil is going to stick to your hand. Umekanko b'sfasa kli. All you're going to now do is just simply scrape your hand on the side of the kli. The asrua mishum uvda dechol. Rashi says, it's prohibited because uvda dechol. Obviously, if the oil is on your hand, that's not going to be an act of shechita. But nevertheless, to do that is a manner in which is akin to the way it's done generally during the week. And so therefore, it's going to fall under the category of uvda dechol. Uvda dechol, which we discussed a number of times in the previous parak, in the 21st parak, also in the 20th parak as well. So this also falls under the category of uvda dechol. A difficult category to really put parameters around it. But when the Gemara says it is us mishum uvda dechol, so at least it gives us now a clue as to try to give a definition. Nispazu lo peres bechatz malaket al yad v'ochel. The next braisa also is going to give one more example of uvda dechol, and that is, let's say the fruit scatters in the courtyard, so then you can go ahead and you can collect it, each one, and eat it as you're collecting, but here's what you can't do, you can't put it back into the basket or into some sort of box, because that's a weekday activity. Now, over here, the braisa is describing a weekday activity, uvda dechol. Presumably, we're looking at Ma'amer over here. Ma'amer, one of the 39 malachos, is that after the wheat is harvested, So then it's going to be put into piles. And that is a malacha d'oreis of ma'amer. And over here, clearly the Bryce is saying that when the fruit falls through the courtyard, and you're collecting it, at worst it would be uvda d'chol, but certainly ma'amer is not even part of the discussion of the Gemara. And perhaps it's not part of the discussion of the Gemara because ma'amer is only going to be an iser. It's only going to be a malacha when it's be makom gidulo, only in the place in which it grew. Over here we're talking about the courtyard. We're already talking about where the fruit was already collected once. And it was already in a basket, and it just happened to have been that the basket scattered throughout the chutzar. So over here, it's not makom gidulo. Probably that's why it is not going to be a violation of ma'amer over here. And finally, we're going to start this morning the topic of schita, of squeezing. But this is going to go well into tomorrow's daf. But at least let us get us started on this discussion. In Tzoftinus, the Paris one is not allowed to squeeze fruit. I'm Rabbi Yudah Mashmuel Modal Yer Rabbi Yudah Chacham in Bezeisim Va'anavim. My time came to l'schita ninu yayv daite. So, we have a machlokis in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Go back to the Mishnah and take a look at the third line of the Mishnah. So, the Mishnah, in soktan sepers lahotzi mehem mashkim yatsu me'atzma masurim, that represents the shita of the Chachamim. The Chachamim are taking what seems to be a very clear stance on any juice that comes out of a fruit on its own is going to be prohibited. And Rabbi Yehuda says, well, it depends on whether it's im la'ochlin, im la'mashkin. If the fruit is a fruit that's typically eaten, or if it's a fruit that's typically juiced. And so what we have clearly our Mishnah is a machlokes hatanayim. And now what Rabbi Yehuda and Mishmo is going to do, and other amoraim as well, is it's going to try to shape the machlokes. So the way Shmuel does so, is he says that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim that when it comes to olives and grapes, so they are, according to Rabbi Yehuda, going to have the same status as the Chachamim, i.e., any juice that comes out of them on Shabbos, even on their own, are going to be usher. Why? Because since olives and grapes are typically juiced, olives is converted into oil, and the grapes are converted into wine, so since they're typically juiced, so therefore a person now is going to think to himself, oh, if the juice that comes out of them on Shabbos is going to be mutter, so then he's going to be much more tempted to go ahead and to squeeze the olives and the grapes on Shabbos itself. So according to Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda agrees by olives and dates that the juice that comes out of them on Shabbos is going to be aser. Now Ula Merav is of the position that no, that Rabbi Yehuda would argue even in the cases of grapes and even the case of olive and grapes. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Alachik Rabbi Yehuda B'Shar Peiros Vein Alachik Rabbi Yehuda B'Zeitzim Va'Anavim. Rabbi Yochanan says that the halacha follows like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to other fruit, but the halacha does not follow like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to Zeitzim Va'Anavim. Meaning Rabbi Yochanan agrees that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing even in the case of Zeitzim Va'Anavim. He just is now going to position himself regarding when do we follow the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to Shar Peiros, when it comes to other fruit, we are going to follow the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, in that the juice that comes out of them on its own is going to be mutter. But meanwhile, when it comes to Zeisim Anavim, so we paskin like the Chachamim, all juice that comes out of them on Shabbos is going to be prohibited. Amar Rava, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Modei Rabbi Yehuda Chachamim, B'Zeisim V'Anavim, Umodim Chachamim Rabbi Yehuda B'Shar Peiros. So now, Rava quotes Rabbi Yehuda in quoting Shmuel saying that when it comes to Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, there isn't much debate, which is that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim in the category of Zeisim V'Anavim. When it comes to olives and grapes, we have agreement that because they are typically used for juicing, so therefore any juice that comes out of them on Shabbos is going to be prohibited. And the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda that when it comes to other fruit, that any juice that comes out of them is going to be mutter. So according to this version of Shmuel, we so far have had two versions of Shmuel. We had Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, and now we have Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. In the second version of Shmuel, we now have Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim basically agreeing with one another. Now, that's very nice, but that's very difficult. Because if you go back to the Mishnah, there clearly is a machlokis in the Mishnah between these Tanayim. And so, how could Shmuel be quoted as saying that we have agreement when clearly in the Mishnah there is a point of disagreement? Amale Rav Yirmala Rabbi Abba Elabe Mai Pligi. So, the Gemara's exact question. So then when are they arguing? We know they're arguing because of the Mishnah. Amar Leh Lechi Tishkach. So he says, okay, good, great research project. So let's do some research on the issue. I'm Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Mistabra Betusim V'Rimonim Pligi. So the Gemara says that when are they arguing? They're arguing in these fruits that are, so to say, somewhere in the middle. Right? What we describe tusim in modern Hebrew is strawberries. Maybe that's what it means. Rimonim is most probably pomegranates. But anyway, in the case of tusim v'rimonim, so that's going to be the point of contention. D'tanya, and the Gemara now is going to be quoting a brisa. And in this brisa, we're going to see now that there is common ground between them, but there's also going to be a point of disagreement. And let's just quickly run through the brisa. Zeisim shemashach mehem shemen v'anavim shemen v'anavim shemashach mehem yayin. V'ichnisu bein le'echol bein le'mashkin. Hayotze mehem aser. So here in the brisa, if I have olives where oil flowed out of them, and grapes where wine flows out of them, and it doesn't matter whether the olives and the grapes were harvested for eating or harvested for juicing, so whatever comes out of them is going to be aser. Tusim shemashach mehem mayim, v'rimonim shemashach mehem yayin. If I have strawberries where juice is flowing out of them, or if I have the pomegranate where I have wine flowing out of it, probably, by the way, the pomegranate over here, the extract that comes out of it is called wine, just simply because it's acidic in nature. But either way, v'yichnisan la'ochlin hayotze mehem mutar, la'mashkin ulustam hayotze mehem aser, divrei Rav Yehuda. So, if I have now this middle category of tusim v'rimonim, so if I put them, if I harvested them for eating, so then whatever comes out of them, the juice that comes out of it on its own is going to be mutter. If I harvested it for juicing, so then whatever comes out of it is going to be aser, divrei Rav Yehuda. V'chachamim omrim bein la'ochlim bein la'mashkin yotzei mehem aser. And the chachamim say it doesn't matter why they're harvested. Whether they're harvested for eating or whether they're harvested for juicing, whatever comes out of them is going to be aser. So over here in this brisa, we have it actually very clear that in the case of grapes and olives, there is no debate between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. In the case of tusim v'rimonim, there is a machlokus between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Rav Yehuda makes this distinction in terms of why it was harvested. Was it harvested for eating or was it harvested for juicing? And the Chachamim make no distinction and say very clearly that regardless of why it was harvested, any juice that comes out of it is in fact going to be aser. And this certainly would be a support for the way that Shmuel presented it in the second version, that for the most part, you have agreement, Zeisim v'anavim, you have agreement between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, and by Tusim v'rimonim, you have disagreement. The Brisa says it very clearly. In fact, the Brisa says it so clearly, Rashi wonders why the Brisa is almost presented like, hey, this is a great support. It sounds like more than a great support. It says it outright. You can see Rashi right over here, who addresses that question. Anyway, we have an opportunity now to go over the daf today. Let's quickly review, and then we will pick it up tomorrow. Beginning of the daf today, we finished up the topic of muksa of tiltum and atzad, and we discussed whether or not one wants to move a muksa item. Can one place a non-muksa item on the muksa item in order to move it on Shabbos? This is the heter of kikar o tinok. And so, we learned earlier in the Masechta that only it has application, but in terms of moving a mace, can it be used for others as well? The Amoraim are divided on this issue. Some Amoraim extend the heter of kikar tinok to other areas of muksa. However, Rav Ashi's position very clear that the heter of kikar tinok is only limited to the mace, but to no others. Abaye and Rava seem to use this heter of kikar tinok, but the Gemara points out that that wasn't the case. They were just imposing a chumra upon themselves. The items that they moved happened to have been non-muksa items to begin with, but because they knew of their position, of their stature, and they knew that other people see them doing something which may look a little bit questionable, so therefore they impose chumras upon themselves. But in actuality, the items that they moved weren't really muksa items to begin with. And then the Gemara just simply clarified Rava's position. Does he subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon on the topic of muksa? The Gemara's conclusion is that Rava subscribed to Rabbi Yehuda Shita, who has a wider range of muksa. We turn to Kuf Mem Gimel and Aleph. We started the Mishnah over there. Three topics that were discussed in the Mishnah. A, how to get rid of the bones and the shells off the table at the conclusion of the meal. The way the Mishnah presented to us is that Beit Shammai is a makel and Beit Hillel is a machmer. Beit Shammai allows you to just simply take them directly off the table. Beit Hillel in the Mishnah says you actually have to pick up the table, pick up the plank of the table and tilt it to the side, tilt them on its side. But as we went through the Gemara, Rav Nachman said, the Mishnah should be presented in the reverse, where Beis Hillel is a Mekel and Beis Shammai is a Machmir, and we should have Beis Hillel siding with Rabbi Shimon, Beis Shammai siding with Rabbi Yehuda. Second issue of the Mishnah is what happens when I have breadcrumbs on the table and shells from the peas on the table. So what do I do with it? You give it to the animal. It's Meichel Behema, and therefore it's going to be non-muksa items. Bread that's less than a kezias. Can you destroy? Can you not destroy it? Various girsas. Our girsa here in Shabbos is that it's usur la'avdam biyad. The girsa in the Gemara Brachos is mutal la'avdam biyad, and the Rishonim try to work out which one is quote unquote the more accepted girsa. The third topic of the Mishnah is the sponge. The Mishnah says that when the sponge has a handle, you're allowed to use the sponge. If the sponge does not have a handle, so you're not allowed to use the sponge. Presumably, if with a handle, it's a davar she'ena miskaven, which is not a psik reisha, and without a handle, it's a davar she'ena miskaven with a psik reisha. That's the way the Gemara seems to present it. That is the that seems to be the most straightforward way of learning the Mishnah. The issue of what to do with the shells or the pits after you eat the fruit, that was the final discussion of the 21st Perek, and the Gemara taught us about various practices amongst the Amoraim, exactly what to do with the pits at the conclusion of eating a fruit. We turn to the top of the Amud Beis, where we started this morning, the 22nd Perek of Masechet Shabbos, in which we first discussed the idea that if a barrel breaks, you can go ahead and you can salvage wine that's coming off the broken barrel, but only three meals worth. You can invite other people to go ahead and salvage it. This idea is similar to what we learned back in the 16th Perek, in that if the Chachamim do not cap the amount of saving that you do, so then it would lead to possibly other violations of Shabbos. Here in the case of the barrel, perhaps Hotza'a, in your desire to go ahead and to get more barrels in order to save the wine, or maybe even fix the barrel itself. Either way, a cap is placed on the saving. And then we talked about using a sponge in order to collect the wine. The Mishnah says you cannot, because obviously that's a violation of squeezing, that's schita. And then while the Mishnah was on the topic of schita, so then the Mishnah continued its topic of schita, and that is juice that comes out of a fruit. The act of squeezing the fruit in of itself is absolutely forbidden on Shabbos. That's one of the malachos. But what if the juice is running off on its own? So are you allowed to enjoy that juice on Shabbos? So what we have in the Mishnah is a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda in terms of the Gzeira de Rabbanan. The Chachamim certainly made Gzeira that juice that runs off is going to be prohibited because of the concern that you're going to end up squeezing the fruit. Is this going to be true all the time? Or is there limitations on this Gzeira? The way the Mishnah presents it, the Chachamim are Machmir and Rabbi Yehuda is more Mekel. But as we have now gone through the Gemara, we see that the Amoraim are divided in terms of understanding the scope of the debate between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda. And where we're at right now is Shmuel's modification of the Machlokas, where that if we're talking about olives and grapes, there is no debate. Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda agree that because olive and grapes are typically juiced. Olives is made into wine and grapes is made into, olives is made into oil and grapes are made into wine. So because they're typically juiced, so according to Shmuel, we have agreement between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda that any juice that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be Aser. The Machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda are going to be in this middle category of Tusim V'Rimonim, where sometimes they're juiced, sometimes they're not. And here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it depends why the fruit was harvested. If it was harvested for the eating, for consumption, for Achila, juice that comes out of it is going to be Mutter. If it was harvested for juicing, then juice is going to come out of it, it's going to be Aser. That is the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim say no. By Tusim V'Rimonim, regardless of why it was harvested, any juice that comes out of it is going to be Aser on Shabbos as part of the Gzerah.